These are African rhythms, passed down to us through ancient spirits. Feel the spirit, a unifying force. Come on, move with the spirit. Stand up, clap your hands. Move with the rhythms, get down.
From WSNC 90.5 FM, a broadcasting service and NPR affiliate of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Africa World Now Project. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. Today, resistance and memory, the story of anti-apartheid organizer Dossie September. Africa World Now Project is next. The way we remember, the forces and institutions that nurture or place barriers on the processes of remembering are not without great contradiction and opportunity, all of which are directly related to the interdependence of legitimacy and consent, the terrain upon which a contestation of power is played out on a daily basis. Understanding what is at stake in this contestation is a duty and responsibility. It is a science as well as an art. It is real and imaginative. Mapping and following the continuities and genealogies of phenomena, more specifically mapping the materiality of memory, allows us to grasp an understanding of the interconnectedness of power, memory, and resistance. To be clear, the systems and structures that prohibit, discourage, and or award us to move away from mapping memory, to move on, to forget, to leave it in the past, have plans. And those plans have nothing to do with freedom nor liberation. It is a strategy that uses concepts like race, class, gender, rights, all essential components to the maintenance of the myth of the nation state, to distort and create memory. Nevertheless, in the web of human history, the most articulate expression of a people's humanity is found in the way they resist, the most vibrant platform which allows visions of the future to connect with now moments. Just as the complexity and vast scope of oppression finds an expansive terrain to evolve with the suppression and distortion of memory, so too is the complexity and vastness of a people's resistance to it. Accordingly, there are stories and necessary continuities that we must identify, and once identified, we must map. We must create a platform to construct memory, not for the sake of remembering, but organized to understand where in the long processes of resisting socio-political and economic inequities inherent in the current global social order can we follow to their logical conclusions. Today, we will present a conversation that Africa World Now Project's Moise Mutale had with filmmaker Enver Samuel, director of Murder in Paris, which tells the story of Dossie September. This film was one of many films that were a part of the African Diaspora International Film Festival, which is held every August, co-sponsored by Africa World Now Project. On March 29, 1988, Dossie September, the chief representative of the ANC for France, Luxembourg, and Switzerland, took the elevator to ANC's fourth floor office in the center of Paris. As she opened the door, she was shot 5 times in the head with a silenced 22 caliber rifle. Her murder has never been solved, although the evidence follows a clear conclusion. More than this, September is not a household name in the memory of anti-apartheid activists and organizers. As stated above, there is purpose and reasoning for this omission. Dossie September grew up in the Cape Flats in Cape Town. Apartheid would only become official policy years later, but racial segregation was already deeply entrenched. After escaping the violence and abuse of her childhood home, Dossie became a teacher and an activist, eventually joining the newly formed National Liberation Front. The NLF worked to organize Black South Africans in the struggle against imperialism and for political freedom. In October 1963, the South African Security Police arrested Dossie for her National Liberation Front activities. Dossie spent 6 years in jail, where she experienced mental and physical abuse at the hands of state authorities. 3 years after her release, she left South Africa for London. It was there she joined the ANC, already banned in South Africa and operating in exile. She would move up in the ranks to become the chief representative in the Paris office. During apartheid, French and major French corporations were some of the most loyal supporters of the South African apartheid government. French companies quickly became the second largest supplier of arms to South Africa. The relationship between South Africa and France has a long historical genealogy, where the first contact between South Africa and France was in 1671 when the Dutch allowed Huguenots, French settlers claiming religious persecution in France, to settle at the Cape Colony. This population was eventually integrated into the local white community, thereby forging deep ties with Dutch settlers. At the end of 1983, Dolcy was appointed chief ANC representative in Paris. Then, between 1986 and 1987, September became involved in an anti-apartheid movement called the Albertini Affair. This movement centered on a French national, Pierre-André Albertini, who, during an exchange program at Fort Hare University, had become politically involved in anti-apartheid activities in South Africa. He was arrested. September, as ANC representative, became a vocal activist for his release and insisted France refuse to accept South Africa's new ambassador unless Albertini was released. Neither the French nor South African governments were very comfortable with the attention this brought to their close relationship. 1 year later, in March 1988, Dolcy was murdered. She was 52 years old. At the time she was murdered, Dolcy was beginning to understand how powerful networks involving European banks, arms companies across the world, shipping companies, and middlemen arming the apartheid South African government in violation of a mandatory UN embargo. What is vital to highlight, none of these actors have been held accountable to any meaningful degree even today. The collaboration of banks, arms, shipping, and other actors supporting apartheid is detailed in Apartheid, Guns, and Money, Tale of Profit, published in 2019. It is without debate that colonial incursions into Africa and the Americas have material and non-material implications that have impacted the very African being today. Our show was produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African and Afro-descended communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Corporation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, Ghana, Haiti, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all people. Enjoy the program.
Enver Samuel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
First of all, I just wanted to you to talk to us about the catalyst of making the film. What inspired you to make Murder in Paris?
I think in terms of the catalyst for making the film was the fact that I, previously to this documentary, Murder in Paris, I'd made a documentary on a person called Ahmed Timol. And Ahmed Timol was also an activist that was murdered in the 70s when he was being held in detention at the notorious John Foster Square police station. And after 5 days of torture, he was thrown out of the 10th floor of the building. And I think that was sort of my catalyst to try and tell these type of documentaries where you honor heroes and heroines of the struggle that are not necessarily recognized. We all know, and the names come smoothly out of our tongue in terms of, we know Mandela and Sisulu and Tambo and Steve Biko to a certain extent, but we don't know the Dulcy Septembers and the Ahmed Timols and the Neil Agates and the Nokutula Simelanis. We don't know those names. And I'm in some way trying to address that imbalance.
So lifting up the names in this, people who are in the struggle, but who may not be known by the ordinary person, per se. That's one of the big catalysts, I guess, for you.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I say, you know, the names I mentioned, we know the big five, and you know, like we have the big five in South Africa with, like, you know the lion and the elephant, but we don't know the foot soldiers of the struggle. Or you might know them if you were in the struggle, but the ordinary people don't know them. And it's about time they get their recognition, because these people are, you know, they actually died. They were tortured, they were killed, you know. And if you look at 1994 and how we got there, a lot of it has fallen on their shoulders. You know, they're the ones that need to be recognized for getting us to democracy.
And do you think, particularly now, as we were just saying, yeah, 1994 was the when the country came into democracy after apartheid, and we're now into the year 2021. Do you see now there's even a greater need that as time we're moving away from that year, and then we, as time passes on, that there is a greater need of people having to know the likes of Dulcie September, who is the subject matter of the film Murder in Paris?
Yes, undoubtedly, because I mean, you know, the ANC as the sort of liberators and head of the liberation struggle, and Dulcie September was part of that machinery, you know, and that time the cause was just, and you know, the nation was behind them, and unfortunately now in 2021 we kind of see that the moral compass that they were fighting for has gone askew. So I think in terms of recognizing people like that, it's almost paramount now, because they speak to the liberation struggle that we knew. And I think to a certain extent, people like Dulcie September would be turning in their graves at the moment.
Looking at some of the, you're talking about some of the missteps that have been made in the current government.
Correct, yes. Yes, unfortunately, if we're bringing it to the present, and if we track the trajectory of people like Dulcie September and what they were fighting for, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've been following some of the, you know, developments, recent developments, you know, like we're saying, what happened and where's our ANC?
Mm-hmm. And apart from making people aware of the people who made these sacrifices, not just material sacrifice, but actually giving up their lives, like Dulcie September, who was assassinated in March of 1988 in Paris. Apart from having people know about those sacrifices, what were the other reasons for making the films as well?
I guess I would call it maybe even serendipity, because I was actually at a documentary festival in Switzerland, and by complete chance met close relative of Dulcie September. In fact, the brother of Dulcie's brother-in-law of Dulcie's sister, who bumped into me at the festival, and we got chatting, and he said to me, he'd seen my documentary on Ahmed Timol, and you know, why don't you do something on Dulcie September? And I said yes, and he told me that when I get back to South Africa, I must contact the family spokesperson, and you know, I mean, and that's how it began, by a complete chance meeting in Switzerland. And I also didn't really know much about Dulcie September, so it troubled me that I didn't know a lot about Dulcie September. And so when I got the family's blessing, I decided to follow up the story quite vigorously in terms of my research, and then realized that this is a extremely strong story and it needed to be told.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's director Enver Enver Samuel, who is the director, a producer of the film Murder in Paris. And in the film, it's a powerful documentary. It attempts to expose layers of deceit and complicity, hidden agendas in the unsolved mystery of Dulcie September's murder, who was killed in March of 1988 in Paris. At the time, she was the representative of the African National Congress in Paris during the fight against apartheid. And the movie will be on display at the African Diaspora International Film Festival, DC. And that film will be virtual this year. And it's presented by Art Matan and Africa World Now Project, of which I'm a part of. And this is the 14th annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, DC, which is from August 13th to 19th. I'm going to continue our discussion, and wanted you also to talk a little bit about some of the obstacles in making the film, since this is a story which this murder, this assassination was never solved. And then we're now in the year 2021. If you could explain some of the obstacles that you encountered as you made the film.
Yes. I think sort of paramount on the heading list of obstacles would probably be trying to raise the funding for a documentary like this, which was not easy, but you know, in the end we overcame that hurdle, but it was not a easy story to get the complete funding. And I guess then if you look at trying to uncover a story that happened over 30 years ago, that a lot of the people involved in the case were probably already had passed away. So I guess the obstacle was in the research and trying to find the right people, getting the right people to talk. You know, if you watch the documentary, you'd see the person that we call South Africa's top spy, Craig Williamson. It took me like over two and a half years to convince him to talk.
And you're talking about, sorry to interject, when you say South Africa's top spy, you mean under apartheid, right?
Under apartheid, yes. I mean, probably the word notorious, South Africa's top notorious spy, Craig Williamson. You know, he point blankly didn't want to take part, but like over the course of 2 years, I somehow managed to convince him to talk. And, you know, you get that point of view from the apartheid government in terms of, we had orders to take out people and that type of language. Dulcie September was an obstacle that because you had to get that reality of that. You know, people tend to forget now, 2021, you know, that there was hit lists, and this was all sanctioned by the government. So it was really important to get someone like him, and eventually managed to. Overcoming the obstacle was by getting persuading Evan Groening, the Dutch investigative journalist that had the study, a quest to try and solve the murder of Dulcie September. You know, getting her to participate kind of helped me in terms of my narrative, in how to tell the story.
And of course, the journalist has spent 30 years, and she was not just a journalist, she was part of the anti-apartheid movement as well in the Netherlands for some time, right?
Very true. She was, so she was actively involved. And in fact, she actually ended up marrying an MK, person from MK, in the ANC. So and she's actually lives in South Africa. So it kind of like all fell into place, because I was wondering, like, initially when funding was the issue, oh, I've got to go to Holland and how would I do it? But she was actually living right here in Pretoria. So, you know, that came together quite nicely.
Mm-hmm. And as you were getting the people in the film, I mean, and also getting the materials as well, and then we fast forward to making it. I just want to, first of all, congratulate you that the film has just received the Best Documentary of South African Film at the Durban International Film Festival recently. Well, congratulations on that. And
thank you.
Apart from getting great reviews in the film festivals, how have ordinary South Africans responded to the film as well?
Yes, so that's been the really encouraging thing. So before the festival, the South African Broadcasting Corporation, our national broadcaster, and it was shown on the 21st of March, which is our Human Rights Day. And we built quite a big drive to get South Africans to watch it. And it ended up being in the top 15 of, you know, the audience ratings, which the SABC said they hadn't seen in a long while for a documentary. So we managed to get a lot of press and publicity going into that date, and you know, radio, print, television. So we're encouraged by the fact that a lot of South Africans have seen it, and we're encouraged by the amazing responses to the documentary in terms of how people have connected with it and how people have said, why didn't I know this woman or know of her? And, you know, I sat with my teenage child and, you know, they were riveted. They didn't leave my side. You know, very, very moving comments about having watched the documentary.
And also, again, with the people who are involved in the movement, have you gotten any commentary from those? I know you interviewed a number of people who were involved there at the time of when the incident happened, people who actually are now in high profile positions. Did you get reactions from those who were involved in the movement and the broad spectrum, not just people who are at the top level, but also the foot soldiers involved in the anti-apartheid movement? Yeah.
So that's the complete irony of this whole, you know, this whole exercise, in terms of if you were to say any reaction from the top of the ANC, it's been totally muted. You know, there's been no you know, like direct call or direct initiative to get involved with it at all. And that, you know, that's the irony, is that in May, President Macron from France was here, and he visited the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and there was an exhibition of Dulcy September's life showing there, and he walked through it, and he commented, and he recognized, oh, you know, this is the ANC person that was assassinated in Paris. And then chatting to the CEO, he says, the CEO mentions, you know, that the family's trying to attempt to get the case reopened, and he actually says, you know, we'll look into it, and we want to look into it. And at the same time, you know, from the ANC, there's absolutely no response. I mean, even up to calling the presidential spokesperson, we got no response. ANC Women's League, no response. Women in the Presidency, no response. So there's this apathy within the ANC for this, but in terms of the foot soldiers and the public, there's been an overwhelming response.
Mm-hmm. And why is that? So, is it that the people at the top have become so far removed from what the liberation struggle was about?
It's a conundrum. I'm not sure. Sometimes it's unfortunately it's the people that surround the people. So like I say, with this presidential spokesperson, maybe he just doesn't see, connect with it, because for instance, you can't say it's President Ramaphosa's fault, because maybe the person below hasn't told him or hasn't said it's worthy enough of his attention. So unfortunately, sometimes it's these acolytes that are surrounded by the leaders that are also to blame.
And again, that's Enver Samuel. He is the filmmaker, director of the film Murder in Paris, which documents the murder of Dalcy September, who was the African National Congress representative in France in March of 1988, during the fight against apartheid. And we're talking to him about the film and what it means in the current situation in South Africa. And I wanted also if you could expand also a bit about the what the film means in France. You just talked about Macron having seen the memorial when he went to the Mandela Foundation and talked about that that France would look into the matter. This happened in France. The French police were part of the investigation, and it seems like not much was done in the terms of investigation. How have people in France seen this film, if they've seen it at all? What has been their reaction?
So currently, no one in terms of the public have seen it in France, because we haven't yet premiered it in Europe. But the clamoring for people to see it in France is really big. But people that were interviewed in France that knew Dalcy, have seen it, and they want it to be released as soon as possible. But I think more importantly for us is that there's a team of French lawyers that have now want to introduce parts of the documentary as evidence in terms of trying to get the case to be reopened on behalf of the family. So that is what we see as a critically important aspect of the documentary, is the social impact campaign that we have rolling out that is seeking justice for Dalcy.
And also, I think one of the things that this film reminds people is the connection of Western countries and multinational corporations in who propped up the apartheid regime. The more we get removed from the struggle, I see people who were on the other side sort of trying to say that they were part of the movement. And I think one of the things that this film does is it reminds people that countries, that the struggle against apartheid was actually a people's struggle, which pushed these countries to do the right things. It wasn't that the countries were doing the right things, and a lot of times were getting in the way of people trying to doing the right thing.
Yes,
and actively going against the people's wishes. If we could expand on that, especially and some of the things that you raise in the film, particularly the sanction busting that the film exposes of the arms industry in France.
Yes, I guess what it touches on is. Yeah.
You are listening to a conversation that Africa World Now Project's Moise Mutale had with filmmaker Enver Samuel, director of Murder in Paris, which tells the story of Dulcie September. On March 29, 1988, Dulcie September, the chief representative of the ANC for France, Luxembourg, and Switzerland, took the elevator to the ANC's fourth floor office in the center of Paris. As she opened the door, she was shot 5 times in the head with a silenced 22 caliber rifle. Her murder has never been solved, although the evidence follows a clear conclusion. More than this, September is not a household name in the memory of anti-apartheid activists and organizers. At the time she was murdered, Dulcie was beginning to understand how powerful networks involving European banks, arms companies around the world, shipping companies, and middlemen made fortunes arming the apartheid South African government in violation of a mandatory UN embargo. What is vital to highlight, none of these actors have been held accountable to any meaningful degree, even today. The collaboration of banks, arms, shipping, and other actors supporting the apartheid South African government is detailed in Apartheid, Guns, and Money, Tale of Profit, published in 2019. Our show is produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descendant communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Corporation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, Ghana, Haiti, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all peoples. Continue to enjoy the program.
Trying to do the best that I can with what I have, with what I have. I mean that sincerely.
Yes, I guess what it touches on is levels of complicity with Western powers that sometimes seem to be allies of the liberation struggle, but we're having this double agenda, you know, working with the apartheid government, but being seen to be, pro ANC or pro the liberation struggle. And I think, you know, these levels of duplicity are exposed and shown to a certain extent. And at the end of the day, I think, it was money talks, sanctions on the surface, but busting sanctions, and arms deals that involved a lot of money. So that unfortunately it is that sort of milieu of money makes the world go round. A lot of doublespeak nations that you thought, they pro the liberation struggle, but underhand we're dealing at a very high level with the apartheid government.
And of course, at that time when Dulcie September was in France, they had already been about a decade long. Well, the arms embargo came into being in around 1977, but we still see that the arms industry in France was particularly connected. Was still connecting with South Africa, and of course there's the issue concerning nuclear technology as well, nuclear transfer is involved, which again was in violation of all sanctions rule. If we could highlight a bit on that without giving away the film so much.
Yes, I guess Dulcie obviously latched on to information, and she had, because she was a people's person, she traveled all over France. She got to know French workers working in armaments factories, and I guess she stumbled upon some information became quite critical. And if you read her notes and the research that is stored at the University of Fort Hare, you get an inkling into what she was doing to a certain extent. We don't know how much of the the real stuff was removed from a disc, but you know, it said that the French intelligence did remove things from a disc, so we're not sure how much of the actual hard stuff has been taken, but you get an inkling with some of her general correspondence about her tracking, you know, oil shipments, chatting to French workers in the factories and stuff like that, that she was onto something. And just in her nature, she was doggedly determined to follow up and try and make a paper trail. And at some point, things became, you know, she was threatened. She her dress was given to the French, to the French right wing, and she had positive sort of confirmation that she was being followed, and you know, people breaking into the office, and at some point she could have really have said you know, I want to be recalled or that type of thing, but she didn't, and she stood at a post, and she wasn't cowed into sort of you know, being threatened that I'm going back, and you know, unfortunately that stance resulted in her paying the ultimate price. But I guess that's in the character of who Dulcie September was.
Yeah. And again, I think going back to when we talked earlier about the reasons for making the film and having people to remember people who are not often mentioned or never mentioned, who were integral part of the movement and were critical in ensuring that the world knew about the injustice that was occurring in South Africa at the time. One of the things that this film also really continues to highlight is also the extent of which the apartheid system was willing to destroy anyone who got in its way. And I think that's one thing that as we further remove from the struggle, people often, I think some who those who are not there or those who are not active or who are younger sort of focus on the demonstrations, but they don't understand that it was actually a life and death situation for a lot of people. That it wasn't just marches that got the apartheid system removed, and that actually people, that there was actually death was actually imminent in the struggle as well.
Correct. I mean, you know, it's hard to believe, but yes, as I, you know, there were hit lists. There were actions. You know, it was actually on record. You know, to take out troublesome figures that were enemies of the state. And yeah, it's hard to believe, but you know that you know, I mean, if you look at some of the archive footage where you see the old army, I mean, you know, it's remarkable, like the parade, you know, because we there's absolutely nothing like that today, where you have this militaristic parades, you know, where there's all the arms on display before the hierarchy of government. You know, that's a thing of the past, but we forget how militarized South Africa was, and how many border wars there were, and how this machinery had to be equipped, you know, with arms and fueled by oil. You know, we forget that the state of war we were in, basically.
Yeah, and speaking of this, the fuel, there was even at that time the oil boycott campaign as well, which was very active in Holland As a matter of fact, they used to run they were one of the biggest points of that campaign, particularly Shell Oil. It was very, very much seen as a company that was violating all of the sanctions things and going around this sanction, was one of the sanction busters as well. And yes, sadly, we see Shell fast forward a few years later in the 90s again, and Shell having a very horrible record in Nigeria as well.
Correct.
So I think in a way, when we watch a film like this, it kind of makes us remind us of certain players in the system who may never have changed their ways in some aspects. And I don't know if that's one aspect of the film. Sorry, I don't know if you were about to say something.
No, carry on.
Oh no, I was saying that I don't know if that was also one of the things that you wanted to highlight is also highlighting what makes certain systems tick and the genesis of these like some of these multinational corporate and even like the arms industry as well. There's still an arms industry, and what is its agenda?
Yes, exactly, and I think James Saunders, interviewed in the documentary, kind of puts it succinctly when he says, you're taking away, inverted commas, the arms dealers. You know, you're taking away him sending his kid to a private school and living the life of luxury. You know, at the bottom, at the end of the day, it all revolves around money and greed, unfortunately.
Yeah. So it's very timely, I guess, and to remind us of what the struggle was about, the people who sacrificed their lives to ensure that there was a freedom. And I think it's really timely to have a film such as this, not just a personal reflection on somebody's life, on a particular activist's life, but also in the broad sense, what the movement is about. So I think that's and Dulcie September also reminds us of that. And I don't know, before we end, I also wanted to see, do you see this film also as a microcosm of those who suffered under apartheid and have not yet received justice?
Yes, it's very important because we're seeing this film as a catalyst to getting the case reopened. The family want that. The family are seeking justice. They, as with thousands of families in South Africa, they don't know answers, or they want answers. They've been living with this blank slate in terms of why was she killed, who killed her. Others are living with where are the bones, who ordered the murder. So we're hoping in some way that with our social impact campaign that we can generate enough interest for people to push for a sort of common goal, and that common goal is to get the case reopened. So it's particularly poignant that we're chatting on what is Women's Day in South Africa, honoring women, that the woman's role, critical role, and it's Women's Month. It's also Dulcie's birthday was on the 20th of August. So I would urge your listeners and viewers at the festival to look up MerlinParis.com and get the information there to sign up for the petition that is titled Justice for Dulcie and addressed to the French justice minister.
So the people should go to murderinparis.com, right, for that petition?
Correct. Murderinparis.com.
To sign up for the petition to have the case reopened.
Yes.
Yeah. And as we said before, this film, Murder in Paris, by Enver Samuel, traces the murder of the assassination of Dulcie September, who was the African National Congress chief representative in France in March of 1988. That was March 29th, 1988. And the film will be at the African Diaspora International Film Festival, DC. That's the film is entitled Murder in Paris by Enver Samuel. Again, the film is Murder in Paris by Enver Samuel. Sorry. The film is Murder in Paris by Enver Samuel. And it's going to be at the African Diaspora International Film Festival, DC. And the festival takes place from August 13th to the 19th. And it's virtual. It's the 14th annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, DC, presented to you by Art Matan Productions and Africa World Now Project, of which I'm part of. And for more information, people can go to nyadiff.org. That's nyadiff.org for more information, for schedule and ticket information. And I don't know if you have any other closing thoughts, Enver, to for us today.
I guess we should recognize these unsung heroes and heroines of the South African liberation struggle, you know, who played a part in us achieving democracy ultimately. There's a quote from Ahmed Kathrada that I found somewhere, who was with Nelson Mandela and Robben Island for a long time, and he was given the keys to Cape Town by the mayor. Yeah, I mean, I don't mean literally, but do you know what I mean? Being honored by the Cape Town. Yes. So he said, I don't deserve this award. People like Dulcie September deserve this award. They were killed. They were assassinated. You know, I was in Robben Island. I was, inverted commas, safe, you know. But people like Dulcie September, Ashley Creel, Neil Agut, Ahmed Timol, they were murdered. They were taken out. There was an order to kill them. They deserve, you know, these honors. And in some way, we need to push for them to be recognized like that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Enver Samuel, again, for your fantastic film, Murder in Paris.
Thank you.
And I guess, again, I just wanted to remind people that the film will be at the African Diaspora International Film Festival, DC, which is from August 13th to the 19th. And for more information, visit nyadiff.org. That's nyadiff.org. And for the petition to reopen the case of the murder of Dulcie September, visit murderinparis.com. That's murderinparis.com. Enver Samuel, thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, and I hope people will be able to connect with the documentary and watch it and interrogate all the, you know, issues that it brings up.
sons of Kenya, taking with Uganda. Remember Rwanda, I see Tanzania, from Burundi to Ghana. Take care of Somalia, Queen Sudan. Love thicker than water, won't you free Bobby Wine? Senegal, Madagascar, I need you Angola. I see Tanzania, my people in Congo. I wanna free Sudan, dance with Nigeria, from Egypt to Libya. Taking with Uganda, remember Rwanda, I see Tanzania, from Burundi to Ghana, take care of Somalia, Queen Sudan, Atlantic and our water, won't you free Bobby Wine, Senegal, Madagascar, I need you Angola, I see Tanzania, my people in Congo, I wanna be Sudan, that's with Nigeria. From Egypt to Libya.
That's it for Africa World Now Project for this week. I would like to thank you for joining us today and look forward to spending time with you next week. We can be reached through all your regular social media platforms. Email africaworldnailproject@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at AFWRLDNWPRJ. Instagram at Africa World Now Project. Access to our other media platforms can be reached through the bios of our social media. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. The Africa World Now Project Collective consists of international media journalist, executive producer, and human rights activist Moise Muntali, Africa World Now Project media correspondent Funa Ngonda, senior research content contributor and production director Dr. Tasneem Siddiqui, senior research content contributor and production associate Dr. Josh Myers, associate producer and content contributor Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, content contributor and filmmaker Kurt Waterson, technology advisor is Byron Gray of Grayworks Technologies, and creative directors, international creative and artist designer Tabassum Siddiqui and Judah Pope. Africa World Now Project can be heard every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WSNC, NPR affiliate and broadcast service of Winston-Salem State University. Programs are archived and available on all podcast platforms. Search Africa World Now Project. Until next week, be safe, be peaceful, and above all, be intelligent.
Sometimes I wonder what to say to you now in the soft afternoon air as you hold us all in a single death. I say, where is your fire? I say, where is your fire? You got to find it and pass it on. You got to find it and pass it on from you to me, from me to her, from her to him, from the son to the father, from the brother to the sister, from the daughter to the mother, from the mother to the child. I say, where is your fire? I say, where is your fire? Can't you smell it coming out of our past? The fire of living, not dying. The fire of loving, not killing. The fire of blackness, not gangster shadows. Where is our beautiful fire that gave light to the world? The fire of pyramids, the fire that burned through the holes of slave ships and made us breathe. The fire that made guts into chitlins. The fire that took rhythms and made jazz. The fire of sit-ins and marches that made us jump boundaries and barriers. The fire that took street talk and sounds and made righteous Imhotep raps. Where is your fire? The torch of life, full of Nzinga and Nat Turner and Garvey and Du Bois and Fannie Lou Hamer and Martin and Malcolm and Mandela. Sister, 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 brother, 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 come, 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 catch your fire, don't kill, hold your fire, don't kill, learn your fire, don't kill, be the fire, don't kill, catch the fire, and burn with eyes that see our souls walking, singing, yeah, building, mm-hmm, laughing, learning, yes, loving, yes, teaching, mm-hmm, being, hey, 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 young, young, young brother, hey, 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 young, 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 young sister, here is my hand, catch the fire and live, 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 live,